I have
Current Geek!
Greetings, fellow Current Geekers, and welcome to Current Geek. Today is March 12, 2020, and I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt, and this is Current Geek. Oh, perfect timing, perfect timing. We talk about items of interest in the geeks of the world and you, and we're ready to roll, man. I feel like we haven't done one of these in a while, so this will be fun to figure out what the crap's been going on. Things that aren't coronavirus related, that'll be nice.
Yes, mostly.
Mostly.
The show is mostly not related to COVID-19.
I mean, look, there's probably people out there who, especially maybe podcast listeners, are like, man, everything I listen to, all my news shows, all my everything, they got a little piece of it in there. And I would just say, yeah, it's big. This one's
big. It's the world.
Yeah, it's the world. We live in it.
Surviving in.
Turns out we all live in this one world and just going to be how it is. But we're here to bring you a little bit of light news in lots of areas. Let's do it now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, time for the news of the week. What's mattering in our lives right now?
Well, that rare Nintendo PlayStation prototype, you heard that right, Nintendo PlayStation, sold at auction for $360,000 to Greg McLemore, founder of Pets.com and Toys.com. So yes, Pets.com went bust, but Greg McLemore didn't. He's got $360,000 to spend on a prototype Nintendo PlayStation. The unit is believed to be the only surviving console out of 200 that were made during that partnership with Nintendo and Sony to produce a console in the early 90s. McLemore says he plans to use the console to create a permanent gaming museum.
So yeah.
Exhibit one.
What's really cool is he's already got a ton of coin-operated arcade machines, a lot of vintage stuff, newer stuff, older stuff. Apparently, he's a lot of the way there. Like, if he decides to just open this up to either the public or just, I don't know, making an official collection of antiquity, he could do it now.
Yeah.
And it's pretty awesome. A couple little side notes. The guy who sold the thing was originally offered $1 million some time back, and he turned it down thinking he would get more later on.
Ooh.
Bad move. Turns out.
It's hard to say, right? Like, if he'd been right.
Yeah.
Right? Let's say he took the $1 million, and then 2 years later, that person sold it for $2 million. Mm-hmm. He would have been like, oh, I should have gone with my instincts. Right? Yeah. Yeah, hindsight's 2020 in this.
Yeah, that's true. And there were supposed to be like 200 of these made. 199 of them, in theory, were all destroyed, but this one. Mm-hmm. And it changed hands through a bunch of really interesting story I won't go into here, but people forget, in 1991, Sony and Nintendo were about to launch a joint project, and it was called PlayStation. It fell apart. Nobody wanted to do it. Mostly Nintendo sort of pulling away. And Sony said, fine, we'll do it. And 4 years later, with the brand PlayStation, in Japan, they launched the PlayStation 1, and then later in the US, and the rest is history. So
it seems crazy now, mm-hmm. but at the time, remember, Sony wasn't a gaming company.
No, not at all. They had done none of this. In fact, what they were, or what they were bringing to it at the time, was optical technology. They were coming to it with like, hey, we can do these fangled new CD-ROMs. Those were new. That was the big hot new thing. Sega had a Sega CD. Nintendo was going to maybe get into the optical drive business and storage business. And what better way to do it than partner with another big Japanese conglomerate that was already well into the next generation of music and everything else with optical discs. So it made kind of perfect sense on paper. What's crazy about it, and there are books and other stuff people should read if you're really interested in this, but Sony went from we make the Walkman and Discman to we are officially now the biggest player in video games in very short order. And it's a crazy transition, just nuts, but piece of history. If I had this thing, I mean, I probably would gladly take $300,000 for it. But I would be tempted to, I'd be tempted to hang on to it. Like Greg, I would almost rather be the pets.com dude.
Right. If you decide which side of this transaction do you want to be on, you want to be on Greg's side.
I do, because obviously he's got the money to do this. Plus, he's doing a really cool thing. And if I had tons of money, those are the kinds of things I'd want to do. So yeah, to me, this is a good thing. I hope it ends up, being kind of a big deal. Lots of universities are doing this now. If they have games departments, they're starting to take donations for their own sort of exhibits and, you know, putting their names on it. I'm actually sending an arcade game from my own house that my dad built way years and years ago when he was in that business. I'm going to send it up to the university, and they're going to, you know, put Frog Pants donated plaque on it and like do this whole thing. And is there something you know, cool to know that it's a little piece of history.
I've often thought about taking some of my old tech that I've collected over the years and turning it into something.
Oh, but what would you put like behind you there in your office there?
That's what I do with it now.
You'd have to come
by the way, pets.com still exists. It redirects to PetSmart. Mm. Toys.com is not resolving into anything for me right now.
I don't know that the last time I looked that up. That's crazy.
Yeah, I forgot all about toys.com.
This was such an early .com bubble period that I had always assumed until recent reading about this, because I'd kind of lost track of him and these two companies and what happened with it all. But I always assumed that the .com bubble burst, that they were, you know, that they were part of the damage. Like they had probably lost their shirt. And I think probably what happened is he got smart and sold all this before it happened. Maybe PetSmart bought it before. I mean, I actually don't know the history, but I think
Pets.com ended up going to PetSmart after the bust, when they just were like, let's just get rid of stuff. sell off the assets.
Sure.
And it looks like Toys.com belongs to True Kids Brands, the company that owns Toys R Us. So that's probably why it's not resolving into anything, because they don't have a Toys R Us.
No, but they aren't they relaunching anymore. Something? Or
I mean, they are. They are relaunching, but maybe they just didn't get to that redirect yet.
I would do that so fast. Oh my gosh, what a great domain! I just, no matter who gets it, that's a heck of a thing. Maybe he made the money just from selling that domain. Think of that. Maybe that was worth millions. I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't find a good description of what happened to Greg McLemore exactly. But I think you're right. He probably cashed out ahead of time.
Yeah.
Speaking of toys, for the fourth year in a row, Lego topped the list of most reputable companies based on a survey of 80,000 people in 15 countries by Global RepTrack. Respondents were asked about a company's products, the corporate governance, the leadership, financial performance, how innovative the company is, how they are as a corporate citizen. Lego came in first. Disney came in second. Both Lego and Disney have been in the top 10 since 2011, so they continue their run. Rolex, Ferrari, Microsoft, Levi Strauss, Netflix, Adidas, Bosch, and Intel. Intel made up the rest of the top 10. Now, you may say, well, didn't they used to talk about this on tech news shows? They did, back when Google and Apple were the first and second, respectively, when the survey began in 2011. Google and Apple both absent from the top 10 this time around.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I don't know. This always reminds me of like Microsoft or Adobe back in the early days, even though Microsoft's back on this list. But you'd see them early in their growth and everybody loved everything. And now they're just corporate monoliths that everyone's irritated with, and for good or
too big for their own good.
Yeah, maybe. And they didn't make the list. But the ones that surprised me both here are Levi Strauss and Intel. Those surprised me.
Yeah. Levi Strauss, just sort of like, because it doesn't seem top of mind, right? You don't hear people talking about Levi Strauss. But, you know, a lot of times with these companies, you forget all the things they do, or they're kind of pervasive, and it's like, oh, well, everybody's still wearing jeans, and a lot of those jeans are made by Levi Strauss. So, you know, it could be that. I know Levi does, it's a different kind of company than it used to be.
Sure.
That one's an interesting brand. Intel is the one that I'm like, they're kind of
boring.
The general conventional wisdom is they're not doing as well as they used to. They're not that they're doing badly, but you know, that you're still waiting for the turnaround. Where's their innovation coming from? But
yeah, they were left in the dust on the mobile side of things a little bit. They have some mobile stuff going on, but not nearly like other mobile chips that sort of took over. And they, you know, the desktop arena isn't exactly growing, but it is predominantly Intel, I suppose. I don't know where the innovation comes from there. That's why it's weird.
Maybe the predominance, you know, and the fact that Intel just makes chips. They don't try to collect your data.
That's true. Levi Strauss, though, is, I bet if you, somebody's probably done this, but it'd be fun to look at like the oldest companies that still exist, like that have just been around time and memoriam. Yeah. And I would love to see where IBM, Levi's in there.
Really old company.
Yeah, it's another one. That's fascinating to me, because so many companies, you know, even at the top end are like 20 years, 25 years or whatever. And these guys are all just breaking records, man. And I'm wearing a pair of Levi Strauss right now. That tells you all you need to know.
Look at that. Like a gold miner from San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm a time traveler. Oh, I've let it out. Now we're
You're John Titor. I knew it.
Shoot. What have I done? What have I done?
Yeah, I'm still trying to find a little bit more about what this Levi, what's Levi Strauss doing? That's part of this.
But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Bosch too is another kind of weird one. I mean, it's just
Bosch. I get, I have a Bosch dishwasher and it's like, just, it's heaven.
Yeah.
It's like Bosch just makes really good stuff. So it on the strength of their products alone, I could see them making.
Also seeing Adidas on here is the only shoe company, no Nike on here. No, yeah. Anybody else.
Nike always gets dinged for citizenship, right? People still perceive them as being,
that's true. Also their left feet and their right feet are different, and it drives me crazy. This is a personal thing. I apologize to anyone else who thinks Nikes are great, but every pair of Nikes I ever wore, left shoe was perfectly fine, right shoe was too tight. And when I went to China in the early aughts, and I toured a Nike factory, the factory I went through only did right shoes. They didn't do the lefts. They were at a different factory. And to me, that pretty much settled it. I was like, well, that's why the one doesn't fit me, right? They're not even making them in the same room. They're all off by a few millimeters somewhere.
But are you sure other shoe companies don't do the same thing?
Well, most of them probably do exactly the same thing. But for some reason, they don't have the disparity. Like, I can buy a pair of, I don't know, Adidas or Reebok or something, and they fit exactly like I would think for the 11s that I buy. But Nike, every time, right shoe's tight, left shoe's loose. It's weird. Don't get it.
Well, how about a violation of relativity?
All right, I'm in.
No, it's not actually. 2018, scientists found that some gamma ray bursts seem to repeat themselves as if they were traveling backwards in time. Recent research suggests that if the waves traveled at superluminal speeds,
whoa,
it's a very important note, superluminal, right? Not faster than the speed of light, but superluminal, so faster than light. There's a difference. I'll explain.
Sure.
If waves, gamma waves, traveled at superluminal speeds, they would exhibit behavior like appearing to travel backwards in time. This would not break relativity because the gamma ray bursts are traveling faster than light travels through the medium of a gas around the colliding stars creating the gamma ray burst or around the black hole. So it's through a medium. Remember, the speed of light in E equals mc squared is the speed limit of light. Light can't go faster than that. But if light's going through water, for instance, it goes slower. And you can have things that go through a medium faster than light goes through a medium, like these gamma ray bursts going through these clouds. And when that happens, that messes stuff up, but it doesn't violate relativity. An example of this is something called Cherenkov radiation, where you see a blue glow when electrons move faster through water than light does.
Oh, weird. I guess I never knew about that either. What do you call that? The Cherenkov radiation.
Cherenkov.
Wow. Those Russians with their ideas, their names. Well, that's interesting. That's intense discovery. I mean, are there any ramifications that we should be noticing here? Like, what's the application / upside, downside of this discovery? Or is it all just...
I mean, this is astronomy, right? Yeah. This is trying to figure out how the universe works. Sure. It's not going to probably yield any practical benefit in your backyard, but it's interesting to just know how the universe operates and being able to tell, like, is there something we're missing in physics that caused this to happen? Or, oh, it's because of the media. Well, our physics does describe this. We just didn't realize it. That's kind of what they're after.
It's that kind of stuff's fascinating to me, especially when it comes to light. I'll admit I've never heard of what was the name of that? Superluminal. I'd never heard of that before until today.
That's just beyond light.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like, I didn't know there was a beyond light. I thought that's the fastest thing we could track.
But it's like beyond beef. It's just for light. It's superluminal means, and this is the thing that people forget. Light doesn't travel at the same speed all the time. Like anything else, it can be slowed down. It can only be sped up to a certain point, and then it can't go any faster than that. That's what relativity says. Mm-hmm. But you can slow it down, like putting it through water. That's the easiest example for people to wrap their heads around, I think.
Yeah.
And so if you can have something go through the water faster than the light does, then it's superluminal, but it's not faster than the speed of light, because we generally think of the speed of light to mean the absolute fastest that light can go.
This stuff's great. Keep innovating, scientists who study light, and do it at superluminal speeds.
Something that emanates light is your television.
Yeah, it does.
And we like to watch things on television. Yeah. And we'll be able to watch more Kids in the Hall on television soon. Amazon's bringing it back.
It's crazy.
The Canadian comedy series will have 8 new episodes on Amazon Prime Video, featuring the original cast of Dave Foley, Kevin MacDonald, Bruce McCullough, Mark McKinney, and Scott Thompson. Executive produced by Lorne Michaels. Wow. You may remember the kids ran for 100 episodes on CBC starting in 1989. There was a movie called Brain Candy that came out in 1996, and a miniseries called Death Comes to Town that came out in 2010. So really, Kids in the Hall's never gone away for long. They just keep coming back.
Yep, and an incredible run of solo work by almost everybody involved in that troupe. And I always love everything they're in. Dave Foley is a guy who I could never get enough of. He kind of disappeared for a while, but was in... third season, maybe second season, maybe fourth season or third season. I can't remember of Fargo, and showed up as a Canadian hitman for a minute. That was amazing. He's also the name of the bug. I forgot the name of the main bug in Bug's Life, but he did that. So yeah, more Foley in my life. You remember News Radio? Dave Foley, man, he was all up in it. He was the star of that thing. So anyway, I'm kind of partial to him, but I'm excited about it because I used to think those guys were really funny. And I think there's a whole generation of people that just don't know. I mean, they know these faces maybe because they've seen them in other stuff, but I don't think they really know what they're going to get into here. It's some of the most innovative, at least at the time, it was really innovative comedy. And it'll be interesting to see if they can revive that today in 2020.
You know, it's weird. I'm looking at this picture on Variety of the cast.
Yeah.
Recent picture of all of them together. And yeah, they look older, obviously, but they all look the same.
Yeah,
they do. You can tell who they are. You're not looking at any of them going, whoa.
Yeah.
That?
Yeah. Like, no, that's true.
You know, great little grayer hair, you know, maybe a couple extra pounds in a couple of cases, but not even a lot.
Yeah. Like Dave Foley used to be all skinny, but he's a little, you know, he's got some meat to him.
He's
now.
Just normal now.
Yeah, he's just skinny. Normal. Exactly. Yeah. He did what I ended up doing, but these guys are just a little bit older than me, but I always felt, like they were our generation of, you know, in the 70s, SNL came along and blew everybody's minds with comedy. It was like that was the comedy, amazing comedy thing, and a little bit of SCTV for people in Canada. And, you know, those were just groundbreaking cast members and comedy in general. I feel like Kids in the Hall were trying to do that for Gen Xers who had a lot of SNL behind them and were looking for something a little new. And these guys brought it.
Well, and Lauren Green produced them, so yep, that makes sense.
That's right. Yeah, it was during his those Ebersol years when SNL was weird. So he went off to Canada, did some cool stuff. So,
and that's how we grew up. We grew up with the Ebersol Saturday Night Live and all of the people older than us telling us how awful it was compared to the real Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. But it'll be good. I really am excited about it. I'm actually, the fact they got the whole cast back together, that's a big deal. So,
They remind me of Monty Python in a way. Of course, Graham Chapman died, you know, midway through Monty Python's run. But Monty Python kept kind of coming back and trying to figure out a good Monty Python way to come back. So,
yeah
it's good. See what they come up with.
Yep.
And then on the technology side, Japan's NHK, the national broadcaster in Japan, has set its schedule of 8K broadcasts for the Summer Olympics Games, which I don't know. The torch was lit on March 12th to go to Tokyo. Ugh. As we record this on March 12th, they're still happening. Who the hell knows? But if they do, you're going to see them in 8K. Viewers in Japan with the right equipment can get the broadcast with 22.2 channel audio.
Oh, wow.
No details on 8K broadcasts outside of Japan have been released, but one would assume that there will be partners worldwide to pass these along. Not that, you know, a ton of people have the ability to receive these broadcasts, but this is one of those proof of concept moments where they're like, look, we know 8K is going to come at some point down the road. This is how we show that it can work.
It's the high fidelity games this year.
Yeah.
Potentially, hopefully. Or maybe, I don't know. At this point, I would have, if you'd asked me 3 days ago, I would have said, I'd probably still do the Olympics. I could see them figuring that out. And a lot has happened in 3 days. So now I'm not so sure. And I don't know what that means. Has this ever happened before? It's unprecedented, right? We've never had like a...
We've missed Olympics because of the war.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, those are... Wars
so
are...
So we have had Olympics canceled because of war. Yeah. I don't recall if the Spanish flu affected the Olympics.
Right. That would 1918. That would have been an Olympic year.
I mean, it would have been around World War One anyway, so yeah. it may have been a combo. If
oh, that's a good point. I didn't. Yeah, I'd have to look that up. I just. Oh man, they just this is such a financial hit. It's so bad. But so is having a huge swath of people getting sick when they didn't need to. So I don't know. I just it's been so long since the world has had to deal with this kind of global thing that I really don't know. I don't even know.
The 1916 Summer Olympics were canceled because of World War One. The Spanish flu had receded by 1920, so they came back in 1920, and then the 1940 and 1944 Olympics were canceled.
Because of
World War II.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So that makes, so it's three in the history of the modern Olympics anyway.
Yeah. And both by large wars rather than by disease.
Now the Greek.
President, 6 hours ago before we started recording this, the president suggested they should be delayed.
Yeah. Back in the old Greek days, they would cancel it all the time just because people wore clothes. They were supposed to be naked. But today, a very different time. Very different time. But also, I do want to say this: 22.2 channel audio. I'll just go ahead and admit I didn't realize that was that we were capable of such feats.
It sounds like an Onion story.
That's crazy. Like, that's crazy. And I also, I mean, I see the potential, right? Like, just think of the range you would have with that kind of how you'd receive it and actually take advantage of it is a whole other question. But 22.2 channels.
I think the way it works, you have six front channels. Two sets of three side channels.
Right.
Wait, 9, 12, two rear channels. I don't know where the other channels are coming from.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a diagram of it.
This is 22.2.
But it's a surround sound component of super high vision.
Okay.
Which is 8K. Yeah. You get a front left, front right, front center. LFE1, back left, back right, front left center, front right center, back center, LFE2.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Insane.
Bottom front right, bottom front left, bottom front center.
I feel like what they've done is created audio. Like it's just, actual yeah. sound.
You know like it's I mean? Actually surrounding you because right. it's everywhere.
Yeah, because how many other channels do you need to replicate that? I don't know. It's amazing.
And 22.2 is developed by NHK specifically. So.
Oh, I see.
That's one of the reasons they're pushing it.
Well, we will see what happens with the Summer Olympics, if they happen or if they don't. But people are definitely happening over there in our Reddit page. They submitted these articles. We should probably give them credit. Who do we like to thank this week?
Jeff Rose. Jeff Rose did the yeoman's work of submitting stories for the Current Geek subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com. Thank you, Jeff. And to everyone else, there were a few other people that did submit some things. They didn't get voted up as high or for editorial reasons, I may not have used them, but they are appreciated nonetheless. So thanks to everybody who submits stories and votes on them at currentgeek.reddit.com.
That is awesome. Also, if you like our show, consider supporting us at Patreon. Patreon.com/currentgeek is where to do it. I'm just putting together this month's new art stuff that'll go out in actual prints right to your door. There are other levels as well that get you lots of benefits. So go check it out. That's how we pay for the show. Patreon.com/currentgeek. Do it today.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right. Forecast is this thing we do. It's a segment now, but it used to be a show, and we used to try to predict the future. And somebody on Twitter was pointing out some conversations we've had way in the past on certain things and saying, hey, didn't this basically come true? Lab-grown meat or, you know, wars over certain kinds of things or, you know, different stuff like that. It's always fun to hear that and see that, and I wonder how many of our more recent predictions will ever come true. But I've got one today that is very short term, and you can check me on this in like, I don't know, 3 years, okay? Here it is. Very short term. COVID-19 will spawn lots of new ideas on how the internet matters more than anything else in modern society as a sort of a utility thing, with a thing that we use. And this will finally be the time where enough momentum in this country, I know lots of other countries already do this, okay, so I'm not saying the world. I'm sure there are other parts of the world that would benefit as well, but we will finally see it as a necessity of modern life, and it will be turned into a common carrier-style utility, something that will finally not be this novel thing that we still treat like this weird extra that you don't need anymore. And an event like this will finally... will force people to at least see the results and go, oh, wow, if it hadn't been for this and the rapid communication and the this and the that, if this was 1918, we'd be hosed. But it's not. And one of the things that helped us was this. Now, that's assuming somebody does some studies and finds all this out and confirms what I'm saying. But part of what I hope happens during all this weirdness is that we gain some knowledge about lots of things. And one of them, I hope, is the internet and it's the requirement to continue to develop it, to make it more of a priority for nations and individuals, and see the industry, see the right kinds of changes that will make it the best thing possible. Because I think we're now to the point where it's like water and electricity. You just can't do it without it.
It's going to be interesting to watch because, you know, we are now experiencing in the United States and Europe what China has already gone through. And so we're starting to see some of the effects of that in China. For instance, there has been a run on iPads and Huawei tablets, both in China, as parents realize that they need better devices for their kids to do schoolwork because they have to do it from home.
Right.
And so to be able to take part in those e-learning, they're ordering tablets. We're also, you know, we saw a lot of outages with services in China during the early parts of the quarantines, and companies had to figure out how to adjust to that. In the United States now, we're seeing, you know, and in Europe, record internet exchange traffic, the likes of which we have never seen before, as more people are using video conferences from home. More people are working from home, traffic patterns changing in ways that have never been seen before, because we've never had that many people all just leave the office at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we're seeing AT&T waiving bandwidth caps for home internet plans. Mm-hmm. We're seeing Comcast providing free access at the bottom end. So a lot of companies doing a lot of things that you would never expect them to do. A lot of internet traffic patterns happening that have never appeared before. And so I don't think you can help but learn something from that. I don't think there's no way there couldn't be an effect from that. Whether that will cause the United States, particularly on this common carrier thing, to change their mind again, I don't think it has anything to do with that. That will be whether there is a Democrat or a Republican in charge of the FCC until new legislation is passed. That's where there's a backdoor for your prediction to come to call.
Right.
If this were to finally get momentum behind a bipartisan solution to say, look, we saw how important the internet was. Let's write the law. Then maybe. And I don't think it's common carrier. That's why I'm picking at your prediction, because no one will want to use those, you know, third rail words. They'll come up with new words that mean the same thing and put them in legislation and pass it.
I think you're probably right. And I think that the legislation part means longer, right? My 3-year idea is not going to hold for that.
Unless you're right that there's so much pressure and from this.
Yeah.
And it also kind of depends who wins the presidential election, because if it's the incumbent, then there's less pressure to change. But if there's a new person sitting in the office, then there's, you know, a mandate for change and there's a little momentum. So sure, that could speed up or slow down depending on how that goes.
Sure. It's. I mean, obviously anything is possible, but I really do think that the more this stuff starts happening around us, the more I think there's an opportunity here to see how it goes. Like on Wednesday's DTNS, we talked a ton about changes in usage patterns, and not necessarily that the ISPs would be strained from a volume perspective, but a everything changes perspective. Work is being done from home, so daytime hours are different, and they're different because it's coming from different places. And, you know, how is that all going to work, and what will it look like in charts when you're done? And like all of that is going to be really important data, and I'm really hoping we see it and we learn from it, and also maybe, I don't know, it creates some momentum and motivation to finally just kind of get off the pot, go hard on infrastructure. I realize what I'm saying means, you know, in this country anyway, it means taxes probably, because, you know, this stuff doesn't pay for itself. And I know it's complicated.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe
honestly,
not. Maybe not.
The change to the open internet guidelines that led to a common carrier like classification did not increase taxes directly.
That's true.
You can argue whether they had impacts this way or that, but there was no direct taxation involved in that. On the other hand, when you put new legislation in, boy, don't Congress like to add some new taxes.
Oh, they sure like to sneak stuff in. So, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's a perfectly reasonable thing to think about.
Yeah. My sister said something interesting today. She says, you know, with the NCAA not having games with fans there for the March Madness games, at least that's the current plan.
Oh no, they canceled it.
Oh, I heard they, oh, did that change today? That was probably today.
Yeah. Like 2 hours ago.
Ah, crap. I missed it. It's happening so fast.
No, it's all right. This stuff is moving so fast right now. I think you can be forgiven for not realizing.
Well, her point was had that held and they were going to do audienceless. Now I don't know how you get this data, but from a psychologist's point of view, which she was just really curious if they were going to really pay attention to what that's like. Like, what is the game like? Is there a way to measure the momentum of the game or the speed of the game or how rapid points are sinking, how often a basket's being made without a crowd? Because otherwise you're just playing a pickup game basically without having the stakes change as far as fan momentum. Right. Does that really change the game itself? And she was like so excited about that. But that was this morning before this announcement had happened. And now we're not going to get it. Darn it. But I do think there's a ton to learn. And I know there's going to be, you know, it's kind of naive to say this because I know there's a ton to learn and everyone's going to learn all kinds of things on the ground and all the way to the top through a process like this in this country and in the rest of the world. But I don't know. I have a weird optimism about it. Like I have a strange kind of feeling of like, well, all right, we know what we have to do. So now let's do it and let's take everything we know and let's do as good a job as we can and then learn from, you know, I don't know. I don't know why I feel that way. It's weird. It's not a despairing thing in my head. It feels like a chance to, you know, I don't want to do this, but because we have
but
to
since
now.
We have to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
may
maybe
as well
there's
do
some
it.
Lemonade that you can make out of these lemons.
There you go. I probably could have said that.
Yeah.
Instead of this long thing, but yeah, let's take lemons, you know, like the virus and let's get some lemonade squeezed out of those viruses. Wait, that doesn't work.
Some non-infectious lemonade.
There you go. Anyway, forecast is fun. If you have your own ideas for a forecast, send them in currentgeek@gmail.com. All right, we got a best thing of all time this week, and I do have a theme for it. Hold on a second. I'm going to play this one. Okay, that's a Pac-Man sound today. That's what you get today. Hey, we're going to talk about our favorite things of all time this week, and it's been a heck of a week, but I was able to find a thing that I really like this week, and that is the current state of No Man's Sky. If you remember, this game launched with lots of problems back in 2016.
There was lots of fanfare, and then immediately lots of problems.
Yeah, it just launched unfinished, not necessarily broken, but just it wasn't all there. What they had promised was barely there. You could see visions of it, but it wasn't what they said. And it was a combination of things, a very small team doing it, but it caught the eye of Sony, so Sony put them on stage, really hyped it up. And then when they finally launched it, a lot of pressure to get it on time. And it just was a bad scene. And I remember I picked it up day one and I thought, well, you know, I'll stick to this because that's what I do and we'll see how things go. But a lot of people were very disappointed. That company and that game have turned themselves around in such a way in 3 years that is almost unbelievable. It is so good right now and makes everybody's top 10 lists and the top three usually of their favorite space games of all time now. You see that on all sorts of blogs and reviewers and that sort of thing. Newer reviews just glow about it. And I thought, I need to get back in there and just kind of see what's going on. They just released these living ships, which if you watched, I think we do an autopilot for the Muppet one. Not Muppet one, but the one that Henson worked on.
Farscape.
Farscape. Farscape was they were in a big living ship. And the developers thought it'd be fun to put out a free update that included this into the game, and now that place is just full. If you go to the common areas, you just see people in their living ships, and they're these big biological ships flying around. It's very cool. But anyway, they have really finally gotten to a point where they have crafted really one of my favorite games ever made. It's just fan freaking tastic. So if you played it back in the day and you're like, oh, I really should check back because I still own it, whether it's on console or on PC or wherever you bought it, fire it up because, man, it's good. And it's not expensive if you're new to it, and it's on sale all the time, and they just keep updating it. It is maybe my favorite thing of all time this week is actually small dev teams who are committed to going all the way with a project like this, even when they don't get money for the updates. It's a nice thing to see in this business. So No Man's Sky, baby. Good stuff. All right.
Cool.
Tom, what do you got this week?
This is going to sound like a flashback, but a shout out to good old fashioned eBay.
Oh,
I have been trying to acquire some items from June 1970 or as close to then as possible to put around the place for my 50th birthday coming up in the end of June. And, you know, I just kind of want to recreate a little bit of the atmosphere of, you know, the day that I was born. Like what were the magazines that were out? What would the tablecloth, you know, what will I serve my Tang in? All of that kind of stuff. And man, I got to say, going on eBay to find this stuff, which is really where you go, unless you're trawling, you've got time to trawl garage sales and thrift stores, eBay's your other option. I've been impressed with how the thing works. Mm. Almost everything is buy it now. I've done a couple of auctions and then I won one of them. Didn't win the others. But there was so much buy it now stuff that I didn't have that desperation of like, I'm always getting sniped by somebody who plays the game better, which is kind of what I remember the early days of eBay. The shipments have all been well tracked and guaranteed, and there's, you know, good seller ratings. It doesn't feel like that Wild West way that it felt back in the early 2000s when you kind of were taking a little bit of a gamble. Well, I wonder if this person will really send me the thing. It felt like ordering from Amazon or Chewy or any of a number of online ordering places, except they were coming from individuals. So hats off to eBay. You don't hear about them. They're not a buzzy company anymore, but they're still out there. They're still kicking and they've kept the product working very well.
Yeah, I agree. This is funny you bring that up because I've had to poke my head in there more lately than usual. And it had been a while, honestly, since I'd really done anything serious on eBay. And I was doing some Mac stuff, trying to sell a couple of things, trying to find a few things. And it's just a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah.
And they've stayed up with the times and things like better ways to quickly get your thing listed without having to do a bunch of research on what you have to say.
Yeah, the listing side too.
That stuff's really easy. Finding what you need is really easy. It's basically a storefront for so many new products these days, but it still has this aspect of I'm looking for old things. And I don't know, like in a way, it feels like everybody wants to just think of them as old internet. Yahoo or whatever. They all want to lump all these older companies into this one spot that aren't, you know, Amazon or whoever pulled out ahead. And this feels like they just put their head down and made a better product over time. So I like it. eBay's good. eBay.com, yo. If you haven't been in a while and you're looking for stuff, toilet paper, I don't know.
Yeah, you might. Yeah. They're actually, I don't think they're allowed to sell toilet paper or hand sanitizer on eBay or Amazon.
Oh, is that true? Weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They wanted to prevent price gouging. So they're like, nope, we just won't allow those items to be sold secondhand. No independent sellers.
Right. We ended up with we were thinking, hey, where's all the toilet paper going? We literally needed toilet paper, like just needed it for normal.
Sure you did, Scott.
We did. I was like, well, we just need like the normal kind. Like what's going on? We couldn't get it anywhere we usually go. And so I'm like, well, what is Amazon even doing? I assumed it was either going to be outrageous or sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on there and they had the kind we like for the same price as we always paid. And they had 24 rolls. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to buy it then.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah. So we did. And now we're fine. And
24, that's probably what you normally buy. It's a big pack for, you know, a large household.
Did we ever predict on forecast there'd be the great toilet paper wars?
Toilet paper outage? I don't know.
Of 2020. Oh, man.
I doubt it.
That's a movie I want to see. Anyway. If you have things you thought were really great this week, let us know because this week was a rough one.
Yeah, toilet paper might be one of them.
That might be one of them. All right. A quick email from a listener. This is an email from Steve Hoos. This is from his mobile phone. He says, hey, for Autopilot, what about Black Sheep Squadron? I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Do you know what that is?
I definitely remember Black Sheep Squadron. It's a, if I remember right, it's World War II, but it's definitely like a military thing.
Yeah.
It was based on the movie Baba Black Sheep.
Oh. Oh, here it is.
But it was called Baba Black Sheep. Mm. That was the original television series, Baba Black Sheep, and then later syndicated as Black Sheep Squadron. September 76 till April 78, based on the experience of the U.S. Marine Corps aviator Greg Boynton and his Black Sheep Squadron.
Yeah, Robert,
yeah, my dad used to watch this.
Robert Conrad just passed away.
Created and produced by Stephen J. Cannell.
Oh, yeah, we just talked about that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was Jim West on Wild Wild West on the old TV show and just barely passed away. That guy's cool.
Conrad did some directing in that series, too.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah, he was 84, just February 8th, just passed away. Anyway, I would watch this. I've never heard of it, so...
I bet it shows up on Peacock.
Oh. Yeah, that'd be a place, right? Because
yeah.
I heard that all that old weird NBC stuff will end up there, or the ones that were produced by NBC.
Well, if it was... Yeah, this is distributed by NBC Universal Television, so I would assume
hard
they would
say.
Have rights, unless they've given them away.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the one that you were wanting where somebody said no, it's available?
Oh, the
Equalizer.
He almost said The Exorcist. Yes, The Equalizer, which is on. Somebody said it was on something. What did they tell me?
Yeah, it's on NBC.
Oh, that's right, the NBC
app.
Which
I knew. I saw that it was on the NBC app, but I was like, oh, you probably have to have cable to get it.
Yeah.
Which I know you don't have, but the person who told us this, and I apologize for not remembering your name off the top of my head, said that you can get a lot of stuff on the NBC app for free without having to have a cable subscription, and that's one of them.
Yeah, apparently that is one. So I may go, I don't know, we may still put that on our list, but I like Robert Conrad, so you've got me at him, and then I'll watch whatever you want. That's fine. Seems
I
like
can't
a good
find
one.
Black Sheep Squadron on Just Watch, though.
So yeah, I'm not seeing
it either.
Have to do
some digging to figure out where it is.
Yeah, plus with the two different names getting used, maybe it's, I don't know, it's one of those. But anyway, Black Sheep Squadron, Steve, we'll take a look at it. A reminder that if you'd like to send in your own emails, currentgeek@gmail.com is the place to do it, or you can leave a voicemail at 801-471-0462. Stick around at the end of the show, because this week Legal Geek swoops in and explains copyrights, moral rights, and how giraffe art in New York City may push the U.S. law on moral rights to the Supreme. Oh, did I say giraffe? Oops. Oh, man. I guess 200% isn't enough anymore.
Yeah, the giraffe art is not pushing U.S. law on moral rights.
Sorry, graffiti art in New York
City.
Graffiti
art may.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That may push U.S. law on moral rights to the Supreme Court, and he's got the scoop, so stick around.
Legal
for that.
Geek, please make sure your next segment about giraffe art.
Yes, please.
And the legal controversies surrounding it.
If you don't mind. After that, we're going to be doing Gone with the Wind. That's our next episode. 1939's sweeping classic, I suppose. I've never seen Gone with the Wind, not even once. I know the references, but wow. Never seen it. Yep. No
Frank
idea what I'm in for.
Scott.
Here. Yeah. Who is
I
it?
I don't give it.
Who? Well, I'll find out soon enough about all the things about it. But I just, when I was growing up, that was my grandma's movie. And
I see.
I just didn't think it was ever
going
to be
for
me.
Never go hungry again, Scott.
Yep. But now... I know, and I know that, you know, the movie dabbles in some topics that are now a little taboo-ish.
I mean, it's about the Civil War.
Sure.
So, actually, this is one of the things I'm curious to see, because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. Because my family would watch it every time. This wasn't quite as big of an event as Wizard of Oz, but every time it came on TV, my family would watch Gone with the Wind. Mm. And so I kind of... half paid attention, because for me it was like, oh, that's an adult movie.
Yeah.
And I think I may have watched it once on my own in high school, but I'm very curious how it plays now, because some of the things that happened in the Civil War, yeah, they're sensitive topics to touch on now, but also happened, right? So how much of it is just like, well, no, that's just an accurate display of the attitudes of the time, and how much of it isn't? I'm curious how that works.
Yeah, I'm too. So we will see that, and we will report back and talk about it at length in our very next episode. That'll be next week here on Current Geek. Before we go, we always like to throw around other stuff we got going on. Tom, I know you got a few things going on. You want to mention anything?
Yeah, we are just perfect timing for you to have a book delivered to you at home. Trigger, the sequel to Pilot X, is coming out March 24th on Audible and in paperback. So you can pre-order it on Amazon. You can pre-order it from Barnes & Noble. You can pre-order it on Audible if you want to get the audiobook. And may I say, the audiobook is quite nice. Yeah. Kevin T. Collins read it, and he did a great job.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's probably my preferred way for you to experience the book. But it is while it is in the Pilot X universe, it's not necessarily something you couldn't read without knowing Pilot X.
Yeah.
It's read to be enjoyed independently, and then go decide if you want to read Pilot X afterwards. Sure, you can. But it's all about Pilot X dealing with the guilt of what he had to do in the first book, and probably having to save the universe again. Gosh darn it, even though he doesn't want to.
Oh, man. A reluctant hero, you might say.
Yeah. A lot of pie and coffee, too.
Yeah. Wow. This just in, Universal Studios now closed as well. They followed suit. Yeah.
It's just the hits just keep on coming.
They really do. We were told today by our governor no one should go to church for a few weeks. So
in Utah.
Yeah, in Utah. Very churchy, very churchy state.
That's intense, like
telling I don't know, New Englanders not to go to mass or tell.
It's like Las Vegas closing the casinos.
Yeah, it's like telling people in Vegas not to gamble anymore. That's the level we're talking about here. Anyway, insane stuff, but we're here for you. We got content coming up, so stick around for that. If you are interested in more stuff like this, might I point your eyeballs over to currentgeek.com because that links off to other shows as well. You can find Tom's Tech Show link there. You can find all the other Frogpants shows. It's a good time. I promise you're going to love it. So go do that. That's frogpants.com or currentgeek.com. Send us those emails, currentgeek@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom. For all of you. Whoops. We'll see you next time. Wait, next time. There we go.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review a recent federal appeals court decision that applied the U.S. law on copyright and moral rights to the tune of nearly $7 million, and the potential Supreme Court future for this law. Copyright laws vary from country to country, but some underlying concepts are to be respected by all countries when they sign on to certain international treaties like the Berne Convention, which gives authors and other creative types reciprocal copyright rights in other countries on those treaties. One of these underlying concepts is the moral rights protection offered by a copyright. Moral rights are generally an author's inherent rights beyond economic exploitable rights in their creative works, including the right to claim authorship of a work and the right to object to any distortion or mutilation of the artist's work. When the U.S. signed onto the Berne Convention in 1991, the U.S. copyright law was amended to recognize some moral rights for the first time. This law is known as VARA, the Visual Artist Rights Act, and VARA prohibits art of a so-called recognized stature from destruction or mutilation. This law was pretty obscure and not referenced often in court much until this recent decision we cover today. Five Points was a famous graffiti space in New York City, and the building owner had allowed these warehouses to become a place where artists congregated and made street art for many years before deciding to convert the space to residential condos and apartments in the early 2010s. A legal battle ensued between Five Points artists and supporters and the building ownership over whether the buildings could be demolished, and on the night when a court order was granted to the building owner against a temporary restraining order stopping his activity, he had painters whitewash all the art and cover it with white paint overnight. This caused much dismay from the artist community and led to further lawsuits. More specifically, several of the artists grouped together and made a claim under VARA that the sudden whitewashing of the graffiti art infringed their copyright moral rights. A Brooklyn trial court agreed with the artist and applied a $6.75 million statutory damages award against the building owner for destroying 45 specific pieces of graffiti art. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals confirmed this decision this year, finding that the damages award and the finding that the owner's wrongful conduct was willful were both correct. To this end, the sudden overnight whitewashing, instead of allowing artists to photograph or recover their works in the months remaining before the building was actually demolished, was a willful act that violated the artist's rights under VARA. The building owner plans to appeal for Supreme Court review, and if they take up the case, it would be the first time VARA is in the justice's purview, while also being the first time VARA was enforced to perfect graffiti street art. There's no real split of opinion in the regional appeals courts on this emerging issue, so unless the Supreme Court thinks moral rights have been stretched too far by VARA so as to be unconstitutional, it seems unlikely that the petition for review will be granted. The bottom line is, sometimes laws have obscure provisions that can protect people when all normal legal remedies seem inadequate. Thanks to international copyright treaties, U.S. authors and artists have some moral rights protecting their works from destruction. Even graffiti can become an art form of so-called recognized stature, thereby being protected from whitewashing and other destruction, which may be a real nasty surprise for others developing real estate in urban settings in the future. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.